So today I have two very special guests joining me for a little bit of a round table for the Live from the Code Bar podcast. This is pretty special today. We're going to have Lisa Finch and Nick Spira, two of my treasure hunting partners. But what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about armchair treasure hunt etiquette. We've got a couple of things that we want to go over today, talk about. We've got some bullet points we want to go over. But first off, I want both of the roundtable participants to introduce themselves. Nick, you've been on the show before, but why don't you introduce yourself a little bit more?
Okay, thanks for having me on, Robert. My name is Nick. Like you said, I've been Robert's partner and probably pretty much since I've got into the hobby, which is around 2017, I believe, and have been involved in various of these puzzle treasure hunts. Been on both sides of the coin with assisting people with writing theirs and doing others. I've had pretty above average success with it. And so this is a good show for me to come on and just kind of like, you know, kind of see things that I've experienced in the past, present, and hopefully in a positive sense for the future. And, you know, talk about etiquette stuff that maybe will bring to light to people to kind of look inward and kind of check themselves for the future as well. So I appreciate you having me on to talk about these topics.
No, it's my pleasure. You like you said, we worked together for a long, long time, both solving, and we've also been in planning stages of maybe possibly doing our own treasure hunt one day. So it's going to be good to have your views. Lisa, go ahead and introduce yourself as well.
Okay, well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show too, Rob. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm obviously from the UK, but I did also live in the States. So I've had the opportunity to take part in lots of armchair treasure hunts, both over there in the USA and also in the UK. In fact, I started really, really young on a hunt called Conundrum, which I did with my parents when it first came out here in England. And that hunt didn't actually end too well. And you might touch upon the story of that later on, I'm not sure. I've also created a couple of hunts myself. I soon figured out that I was probably better at writing them and creating them than I was at actually solving them. And I suppose my tour de force is carrying out research online and finding things out. And that's what I really enjoy about the treasure hunt and especially the armchair ones. I'm not too keen on boots on the ground, especially if I'm going to break my nails or do anything, you know, where I'm going to get really dirty. It's not really my cup of tea. I like to be sitting there in the background in front of my computer, finding things out, learning about history, learning about different places. That's my bag. That's what I enjoy doing. But I hope I can offer you a good perspective on treasure hunting in the UK and the etiquette of that from what I've experienced and seen versus possible differences with what takes place over in the States and particularly online.
Excellent. Absolutely wonderful to have you on with us today. We've been working with you, Lisa, for a while now, ever since you did do Letters of St. Germain. And it's just been fascinating, like you said, learning the differences of both you as a creator and then obviously having you on a team and helping us solve other hunts, getting the different perspective. I've talked about this numerous times on my podcast real quick, but our team, we each bring a different sort of part to the team, which is why we work so well. Nick and you are great with the research and the that looking at something and getting something out of like a verse or an image. Adam and I, we're pretty good at code, so we work really well as a team together. So but getting right into this obviously topic today, I've got a list that I know Nick has sent over that I want to kind of start going over with you guys. And if we do go over too much time, we'll address more on a future podcast. Starting with some, a topic that, let me start this off by saying that a lot of the reason why we've decided to do this podcast today and have it come out pretty quickly is there's been a lot happening in the armchair treasure hunt community over the past couple of weeks. Different treasure hunts have had issues that are going to come up and be addressed here. Number one, we've all agreed we're not going to bring up any names. We're not going to be pointing out anybody. That's not what our goal is here today. Our goal is to talk about what has happened and sort of make sure that, you know, at least with us, we know how we can work to fix that sort of situation. We don't want that to sort of keep happening, especially in this hobby that we love so much. So my first big topic that I wanted to bring up to you was in regards to buried armchair treasure hunts, boots on the ground, and digging etiquette. This probably has a lot to do with probably The Secret right now. There's been some controversy in the different, and I say this, and I've said it to both people's faces, there's lots of different factions of The Secret. There's a one side, you can almost call it the West Coast, and then there's the East Coast side of The Secret. Some have gone out on a limb and say, yeah, go out and dig. You're not going to be able to say that you have anything until you have it in your hand. And then there's the other side that's kind of saying, well, don't dig, get the right permits, get the right, everything that you need, you know, line your ducks up properly and then go get it. You know, don't do it wrong. Obviously, let's start with you, Lisa, on this topic, if I can. What are your thoughts on this kind of buried digging etiquette subject?
Well, personally, I think you have to stick to the rules. As far as The Secret is concerned, unfortunately, you know, the book was written all those years ago. Times were different. You could wander into the Fountain of Youth and pretty much do what you like, as far as I can gather. So putting a spade in the ground and pretending that you're a contractor or a builder, you know, it was so easy. But then these places, they become protected. We have a different respect for history and culture now than we did, you know, in the 80s. They used to demolish beautiful old buildings at the drop of a hat, and that just doesn't happen these days. And it's the same with looking for things that are buried. You can't just go putting a shovel in the ground and thinking that that's okay to do, because you're going to damage something. You're going to potentially destroy something that is historically important. And I just think that that's really bad form. Everyone has to make their own decisions with regards to this. And it's their own conscience which will drive them in a certain direction. But as far as I'm concerned, treasure hunting, it's a great hobby. And it's an adventure. However, we need to stick to the laws of the country that we're in. You can't just do what you want. You just can't do it. And if you go out and you find a cask and you're digging in, say, Charleston, in White Point Garden, and you're not supposed to be digging there, you can't dig there. These are protected, historically significant locations. And you pull one out of the ground, what are you going to do with it? How are you going to declare that to the world? Are you just going to take it home and keep it secret? Are you not going to tell anyone? Or are you going to be on the front page of the local newspaper and run the risk of some sort of lawsuit or prosecution because you didn't have permission to dig there and you shouldn't be digging there? I think a lot of it has to do with the sort of person that you are and the rules that you live by yourself that dictate your actions in this respect. For me personally, I stick to the laws of the land. I stick to the laws that protect the history of that land because they're there for a reason. And I might not like it. I've been in St. Augustine. I've wanted to dig so badly. But you can't. Because it is, you know, it's an archaeologically protected area. And you do not have the right or the experience, or you just cannot go above the laws of the area that you're in. And it shows a poor lack and a lack of respect for the history of the town or the location if you're going to do that. And especially those people who go digging. And they don't even bother to clean up after themselves, and they just leave holes everywhere, and it's just really bad. It's not to be encouraged at all, and I disagree with it wholeheartedly.
Very well said. I know there's been a lot of talk about this, like I said recently. Nick, what do you think on this? As somebody that I know has, with me, dug up actually a treasure, what are your thoughts on this digging buried etiquette as well?
I have opinions on both sides of the coin. As an author, like if I were to write a hunt, I've been in this a while and I know how addicting this hobby can be. And the reason I say that is because, like you said, I have dug with you. I've dug without you on the phone, and I know how easily you can be wrapped into something that you're so sure of and would be started as a 12-inch hole, and, you know, 12 by 12-inch hole is now a 3x3 hole. And maybe if it's not there, it'll be 3 feet over here. And maybe if it's not 3 feet over here, then it'll go 3 feet over here. And it's a very easy trap to get caught into. Me personally, I have gotten close to a lake in the middle of an Everglades in Florida when I was the only person in the park. And I literally had alligators croaking and grunting and splashing into the water, to the point where if I got close enough and one was hungry enough, nobody would have ever known where I was. That would have been the end of me. So I've gone to that edge, and I can say that wasn't a good decision on my part. I've had success with you in digging, but at the same time, it wasn't a hole that came out on the first try. So my perspective of this, and I'm going to touch on a couple of things where Lisa talked about. She talked about dressing up as a, you know, pretending that you're something you're not. I think if you're in a situation, and I agree wholeheartedly on places that are archaeologically protected, or if it's a historical park like White Point Garden, or, you know, St. Augustine, where it's a private park. I mean, private, forget it. But when you're dealing with public, like a city park, I mean, if you're going to go in there and you dig, okay, I'm going to dig a hole. This is my solution. This is my hole. I'm going in there in plain clothes. I'm digging my hole. I'm setting my limits. And if it's not there, I'm filling in my hole. And that's going to be the end of it. And if I get stopped by a police officer, I'm going to tell them exactly what I'm doing. If I get fined, I get fined. You know what I mean? But at least I could say I was transparent. You know, for city parks, it's different. If you do the research and you have clear research, like don't dig in our parks, then, you know, that's on you. But if you're just going in there and there is no real defined rules and you're just digging a 12-inch hole and it's not there, you got to kind of stop yourself. And I think, you know, this whole concept of stopping yourself in moderation is going to be a continuing theme throughout this podcast whenever it's my turn to speak. I think proxies are a better choice to do for prizes or things for people to find. Like if you really need to give somebody a boots on the ground experience to where they have to leave their house and find something, it's a lot easier to just hide something above ground. You're still looking for it. You find it and that's it. And even more so, you know, if you still want to give people even if you do a full armchair, here's my experience with boots on the ground hunting and not. I also geocache, and I can tell you that I get the same rush of finding a geocache than I have when I found a whatever on a hunt. It's the same exact rush. So my question to people would be is, if that's not enough, then what's causing you to want to have to do the boots on the ground with a hunt than it is for geocache? Try some geocaching first, get the rush, and then see if it's really worth, you know, going that extra mile and taking that extra risk, dressing up like a construction worker, which is ridiculous, by the way, and taking that risk. I think a lot of people, what happens is they get caught up in this idea that I have to be first. So I have to find it, so they don't stop digging. And you start focusing on being first and beating other hunters. My answer to them is, remember that the real opponent is the puzzle. It's not the other people that are doing the puzzle. So to beat them, you got to beat the puzzle. So closing on this topic, I would say that the best way, I think, to kind of deal with this all together moving forward is, like, stop burying things. Just hide things, and you're not going to have these problems whatsoever. Any proxy hunt that I've ever been involved in has not had a problem. So
that's a great answer. You're right, because there's been a couple that we've been a part of that have had proxies, and it's just been a simple grab and go. And I know the great US treasure hunt is doing proxies. We'll touch on that later, but nothing buried or anything like that. But something that is buried, the person who has buried it, I mean, if that person buried it, like with The Secret, years and years ago, and things might have completely changed in the 40 plus years, but somebody burying things for a armchair treasure hunt today, they're going to have to know what the rules are, because if they want people to come in and dig it up, they're going to need to know that that's allowed, because it's not just going to be the person that's digging it up. The person that actually buried it can get in trouble as well. I mean, that's the whole fact of the matter is, if they're publishing some sort of a book or a treasure hunt and they say, hey, come dig up my treasure, and it's in the middle of a national park, they can get in just as much trouble as the person digging it up. So it is kind of, it's an interesting topic, but it does lead into the next one, which was again about boots on the ground. And this is something really that has come up with, as I said, the great US treasure hunt and everything like that. It's the topic of boots on the ground partners and how much they're worth paying if you are going to pay somebody to go dig something up for you, if that's the case, or in a lot of cases, find the proxy for you. As a creator, going back to you again, Lisa, as a creator that has done treasure hunts where, some of your hunts have been like a virtual, you just need to find the location. You don't need to have boots on the ground. But what are your thoughts on the whole idea of somebody going boots, getting somebody to go boots on the ground for either one of your puzzles if you needed to, or if you were playing yourself?
I think that if you're getting someone to go boots on the ground for you, then you have to split the prize, whatever that is. If it's a monetary amount, your team who've been working on the verse get 50% and the boots on the ground person gets 50%. Because without the boots on the ground person, you're not digging anything up. You're not winning anything. You might have solved the problem and you might have solved the hunt, but you can't actually go and retrieve it. So their role is vitally important. However, I don't think that the boots on the ground people should be selling themselves to the highest bidder, if that makes sense. I think there still has to be an element of sportsmanship and working as part of a team, because the boots on the ground person, even if they're a stranger and you don't know them very well and you only chat to them occasionally on a Facebook group, they still then instantaneously become part of your team and should be treated as such. I haven't taken part in many boots on the ground hunts. I did take part in one. It was the Red Herrings hunt, which incidentally I really enjoyed because it was my sort of thing. It was verses, it was looking in cities and unusual places. And as the name suggests, a couple of the final locations were actually red herring places. There was nothing there. You thought you were in the right place, but you weren't, which was a really cool concept. But I actually had to pay a taxi driver in Pittsburgh, I think it was, to go and have a look at a particular spot, which actually turned out to be a red herring. But I said to him, look, whatever we win, you get 50% off, and I'll be paying, for your time as well on the clock on the taxi. Because to me, that was the fair thing to do. That was the right thing to do. It was the honourable thing to do. Because that person then became part of my team.
And Nick, I know this very hunt is where I had thoughts on this as well. But why don't you go in first, and I'll follow up after you.
Actually, this was a topic that was actually given to me by another hunter. They knew I was going to do this, and I felt it was very important. When it was explained to me, I'm like, absolutely, I'll do this. And so for this person, this is for them, and I'll weigh in on what I think was right and considering my own experiences. As far as what they're actually worth, I think that is between the person solving it and the person going boots on the ground. The boots on the ground person is not going to even know about it. Well, I'll get to that in a minute. The person who solves it is going to be the person that initiates this to begin with, And when it really comes to it, like, how much are you willing to pay? If it's a cash prize, this is what I would do. I would at least give them 50-50. That would be the starting point to me, because like Lisa said, if you don't have it, if you don't have them, they ain't going to get anything for you. You're not going to win anything. For us, it, like, I'll use the same hunt that she was talking about, the red herrings hunt. Like, we solved one of those there, but it was in Vermont. And there was no way I was going to ask you to go to, you know, Rob, leave your house in New Jersey at 5 a.m. tomorrow.
I'm not going to lie. I thought about it.
Yeah, I know you thought about it.
When we were solving it, I actually did look up the time to get to the location, whether I could do it between, you know, shifts at work or whatever. I thought about it. I'm not gonna lie.
Right. And then and then I thought about it too. I'm driving into work and it's dark out and it's 5 a.m. and I'm just like, this is crazy thinking to expect somebody to do that. It wasn't a really big prize. But the one that we solved, I mean, out of all the artwork in that hunt, I was willing to pay whatever it took for it. I liked that piece of artwork. So what I did, and I'm glad I did it exactly the way I did, because now we have this issue with another hunt, I guess, where it was like multiple underground partners, and it's all involving people that were involved in the hunt. What I ended up doing is I ended up just finding something. I had no idea about the hunt at all. I just found the bridge that the proxy was at, and I pretty much drew a circle around it of all the businesses that are around that bridge. Found their opening times, and it just so happened that a sporting goods store opened up at like 6:37, which was just about the time where I got to the exit that I needed to go to work. I called the store at opening. A guy picked up the phone, and I was just transparent with him. I'm just like, this is who I am. This is why I'm calling from this area code. I sent him a picture of me with my work shirt on, so he knew I wasn't full of it. I said, here's the deal. I said, you're a mile away from this bridge. Underneath this bridge is this rock. If you find this rock, I'm going to give you a couple of $100, and that's it. All you got to do is send me a picture of the rock. As soon as you send me the picture of the rock, give me your PayPal email, you'll have a couple of $100. It was that quick. And I'm glad I did it that way because, you know, he had nothing to do with the treasure hunt. You know, it had nothing to do with that. So I don't got to worry about him, like, backdoor dealing me with another team or anything like that. So that's what I learned from that experience. And if I ever had to move forward where it's like, all right, well, it's a boots on the ground hunt. Now, you know, it's really far away and I have to find somebody to do it. I would find some total rando and, you know, pay him the money. And it worked out. He was there and back in 10 minutes. He had a picture of the rock and I gave him the money and that was it. And then he sent me the rock. And it was a proxy item. It was probably the nicest proxy item I have in my collection. It's a painted rock and stuff like that. So that's my experience with it. So I echo a lot of what Lisa says. At the minimum, if it's a cash prize, it's 50-50 minimum. And I'm not setting rules. You know, this is not to set rules. This is just my opinion. And I don't feel that. And this is more for the person that brought it up, because I echo what they say. I don't feel treasure hunt authors should be making the rules on the split between the person finding it and solving it. I just think they should leave it up to the people, you know, to do. So that's pretty much why in my experience with the whole boots on the ground and worth and how it worked out well for me and how I'll probably approach the issue in the future.
Now that brings up an interesting thing, and again, you've done well segueing into the next question. And again, this is because of recently, multiple boots on the ground people all working in the same hunt that don't even know it maybe, but all working for the same team. What are your thoughts on that? You know, we'll take it in this way because let's just say that maybe as the example that will go this way, that they don't know that there's other people going boots on the ground for the same team. Maybe they don't know that. Maybe they think they're the only ones. But we can also bring in if they know there's multiple. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think this is worth that much as a hobby to have multiple people, you know, prepared to go search for this proxy or whatever for you? I mean, Lisa, what do you think on that?
For me personally, probably not. But the way I look at this is probably from a slightly different perspective, because I think about the people who've created the hunt and have allowed these situations through the creation and design of their hunt for these situations to arrive, where you've got two teams at the same place at the same time. You've got multiple people who've been asked to go boots on the ground, two boots on the ground people for the same team. They're all running around this park at the same time. I just don't like it. I just don't like it. But that's my own personal opinion. And I think that if I have a team of people and I have a potential solve and I have my spot and I have someone who is in that location who's going to go boots on the ground for me, they're my person. They're my person who is there and is going to go and look for it. I don't really want to go and complicate matters and muddy the waters even more by bringing in another boots on the ground person who's going to do pretty much exactly the same thing. It's just really overcomplicated and overly competitive when it doesn't need to be. That's all that I think about that. But I don't like the idea of hunts where they're not simplistic to solve. That's not the right word, because they're often not. They're too fast to solve.
Yeah, it's a race then. It's a race, yeah. more than a treasure hunt.
Yeah, and that's not my sort of thing. I don't enjoy that. I did one in Florida once, and I set off and I was driving north, and I was sort of like 2 hours, you know, in the car, and then I found out it had already been solved. Well, it doesn't seem very fair to me, to large groups of people who might not live in close proximity, even though they've got a solve. If that makes sense? I just don't like these type of hunts. I think they open the door to lots of shenanigans and things that turn into a little bit of negativity and unpleasantness.
No, and that's why we're talking about this. I don't disagree with you on that. I think in the example that we're giving here, it is, and not to say that it's a bad treasure hunt, but we're talking primarily mainly about the great U.S. treasure hunt that's going on right now. It's usually on a Saturday in a different city around the country, and the participants are numerous, and they're not normally all in the city, of course. Like this most recent one, as we record this, was in Asheville. And I know lots of people don't live near Asheville, of course. So they were looking for, there was people sort of almost, for lack of a better term, advertising themselves online, on Facebook, on Facebook groups and stuff like that, as boots on the ground people. You know, they weren't solving it. They were just there waiting to be contacted to possibly go find it. I'm of a similar thing. I think that the whole race thing of a treasure hunt, it just doesn't get it for me. Like, by the time I feel like I've solved something, I've raced to try and solve something before, but never in the same day. Like, there's been times where me and Nick and even with you, we've felt like we've been close, and maybe there might be other teams that are close by, or feel like maybe somebody else might be closer than us. But that doesn't give us, I've never felt like it's a race to the actual spot. And I just don't think like that's fun for me. You know, I would rather have something where I've solved it either, you know, or gone to get it ourselves, or send somebody to go get it, as we talked about before, but just sort of a little bit more leisurely. It's more of a hobby. It's more of a bit of fun. The race thing just doesn't do it for me. What about you, Nick?
Oh man, this is, wow. So the multiple boots on the ground partners, like you said, it was the great U.S. treasure hunt. So I'm also in the same camp as you guys. I'm not a big fan of the race, like the, you know, the 60 minute puzzles. And this is kind of like a pivot off their last hunt. I mean, me personally, I look at the solution of the last hunt, and for me, it kind of felt like the solution was always dependent on them releasing a clue, because their technique wasn't even really a puzzle. It was just a random pattern throughout the book and nothing to really clue you in on that pattern until the clue dropped. And then people were like, oh, it's after the comma, or, oh, the first letter of these, stuff like that. But it was always dependent on the clue, which causes a frenzy, right? And so the technique has changed, but the concept of creating the frenzy has not changed. And I think what happened is I don't think he realized the length that people will go to. And I think he started realizing that, because you got to remember with this new one, he's there. He's at the location just watching people rat race for this thing. And what is he seeing? He's probably seeing parents with like their 8-year-old kids and 10-year-old kids just trying to give them an experience, right? And then in that beehive frenzy of parents and kids, there's 40-year-old dudes on their cell phone on a Zoom call with 8 other people, you know, aggressively searching for the same thing. So he sees that. And then when he realizes that it's gotten to the point where like 2 people are working for the same team, he creates a new rule to try and make it a little more, I don't know, fair, I guess. But in my opinion, even creating the new rule, just because I just know how addicted people are to winning, I think people will find a way around that too. They'll start being anonymous. They'll start being anonymous. I think that's a good red flag is when you have to start to force yourself to be anonymous, you might want to start looking in the mirror. You know? Yeah. So,
true.
I think that's what he saw. I'm trying to look at it through the eyes of the person that created it. And you're probably seeing people just trying, you know, they're just out there trying to have fun with their kids. You just got other people out there that are just like, all right, guys, where am I going? You know what I mean? And there's like a bunch of people and they're all adults and they're getting this aggressive over $1,000 and you're splitting it between like 9 people. I don't know. I've never been the one to be like, my team's the team, you know. Mm-hmm. We're defending the title. Like, I'm like, no, dude, I have way more stuff going on in my life than to defend a made up title in a community of 2,000 people. So I think kudos to him to try and put the brakes on it. You know what I mean? I don't know if it'll technically work, but I do agree with what he tried to do. I think he saw what was going on and he's like, geez, man, people are this nuts. And he did something. Doesn't mean it'll work, but at least he tried. So that's my position on multiple boots on the ground partners. I'm with Lisa. I default to what I said before, and it's just like, if I'm going to find somebody boots on the ground, they're not even going to know what they're doing. I'm just like, dude, I need you to go to this park or something under this slide. Send it to me, and I'm giving you money. Don't worry about that. And I'm transparent with them. They know who I am. They know I'm not full of crap, and that's the end of it. This way I don't got to deal with, you know, being blackmailed or backdoor dealed. I'm working for this team and now I'm working for this team and it's just ridiculous. So, that's my position on it. Hope I wasn't too sharp or too long.
No, not at all. Not at all. This is the whole reason we opened this up for conversation this way, is to bring this all up to talk about this stuff because it's important for these sorts of conversations to be had because I mean, this is a community of treasure hunters, armchair treasure hunters, whatnot, that, you know, everybody talks about how we're always a community and how they're always trying to create a community. You know, all the new treasure hunts that are coming out are all about creating a community. That's all somebody says to me when I speak to them about their treasure hunt. It's like, I want to create a community. I'm like, well, there's already a community. So, you know, work with that community, then create your own. But the big thing is that this community, we don't have rules. These are what we're talking about here today are not rules. These are not something that anybody else has to live by, but they are something that's coming from our experience and not to toot our own horn, but all of us on this show today have had some experience of winning a treasure hunt of some sort. You know, Lost Skull for me and you, Nick, Letters of Saint Germain. Then we've got the BOSL that we all solved together. You know, we've all worked on trying to solve these things. And the reason we want to bring this up is so that others can sort of, they can take what we say or they can totally ignore us, but we do have sort of some experience in why we say these things. It's not like we're just coming off this saying, hey, you know, we don't like this because we lost. You know, we came in second at the Great American Treasure Hunt. I personally have not actually solved one of their puzzles because, again, I just don't like the format. So I'm not speaking of this as being a loser saying, well, you know, my two boots on the ground people didn't make it. I've just not participated. So I'm looking at it from the outside in terms of the community.
Honestly, I think that's a good place to – a lot of these topics, I kind of like looked at it before we started doing this, and it's just that's kind of the way I look at it. It's just like, what is going to be healthiest for the community as a whole? Number one, what is going to help the author bring more people in? Number two, and number three, what's going to make the hobby attractive to new people? You know, you want a bigger community, but you also want some common sense too. Yeah, we get it, it's a competition and stuff, but it's just dude, you know, like, people need to relax.
Yeah, I think it's really important as well, just to reiterate what Rob said. We are not trying to preach to anyone. I'm not in a position to be able to preach right or wrong to anyone. We all have to make our own decisions with hunting. But I know that a lot more children and younger people are getting involved in treasure hunts, which is a great thing. I just don't like to see any sort of negativity or ill feeling or arguing that might be taking place on a Facebook group because something like this has happened. If you want to do one of these race hunts, that's up to, entirely up to you. We all enjoy different things in life. But if you're going to do it, you know, just think about the way that you're doing it and the consequences that that can have on other people.
Yep, exactly. Now, number four on our list today, and I'm going to come straight to you first on this one, Nick, but number four I wanted to talk about was publicly disclosing a location of a proxy or item or end location of a hunt, but then the token isn't there. Again, there is a specific example of this, but what are each of you thoughts on, like, somebody that's part of a treasure hunt going, seeing to a location, seeing that the token proxy is not there, and then basically broadcasting it to the world saying, hey, I'm here, and it's not there. Do you think that's fair to the other people that are playing in the hunt? Do you think that there's other things that could be done? Nick, I'm going to go straight to you on this because I know this is one that's important to you.
Yeah, because this was kind of brought to me as like an issue between two people. And I kind of see it, you know, you kind of zoom out and you look at it from both angles and you try to, I'm not going to say pass off judgment, but I see the point of views with this. So in a scenario, like, let's just create a scenario where there is a hunt that has multiple tokens available. Let's say 30, okay? Hunter A decides to go and, you know, finally finds this location, goes out to the location. She knows she's right, or he's right, whatever. And they find the location. They know it's right, and the token is not there. At that point, they're just like, I don't care. I found a location. I don't need a token. They make a post about it and said, hey, just letting you know, I'm here. This token's not here. Save yourself the trip, whatever. To which now you have Hunter B, who comes in and gets upset about that and says that, you know, hey, you're ruining the hunt for people by publicly posting that. There's unwritten rules, all this type of stuff. You know, there's people that are trying to do that. You know, oh, by the way, you know, my team's been working on this very hard and we've already solved 9 of them. And, you know, but what you're doing is ruining it for everybody else. So my position on it is, I don't feel in a scenario like that, I get the point of, I can see it through the eyes of the Hunter A, where it's like, I don't think they were trying to ruin it for anybody else. I think they're just trying to save people gas money, to be honest with you. And you got to remember that these things are like, they're not really worth anything. So I look at it in like a total thing. I mean, my position on it is like this, we're talking about ruining the hunt for other people. And this is where I default and I kind of talk about bringing new people into it. There's 30 of these things available and you have somebody that's, you know, scolding somebody for publicly posting one when they've already found 9. So I'm like, if we're about not ruining it for other people, maybe stop after finding 1 instead of 9. So I don't see how either of them are ruining it any less. That's kind of the way I look at that type of situation. I get it. I get it from both sides, but publicly disclosing a location, look, it's a location that's a broken location. So the author doesn't do anything about it. You're actually doing people a big solid because you're not letting them come out to a place where they're going to not find a token. You know, they're not going to find a token if they go out to the place. But at the same time, on the flip side of it, there could have been somebody that was close and they're like, dude, thanks a lot. I was going to go look for that. But even if they did go look for it, they wouldn't have found anything anyway. So I don't see either of those two ruining it. I mean, I see one ruining it just as much people as the other. One more of in terms is just like, hey, if you're about other people having it not room for them, then just get your fill and get out. You know, don't hoard multiple tokens. You know, it's like, it's almost like dealing with, the last rush I had wasn't good enough. I need another. So, that's pretty much the way I look at it. It really depends on the situation. That particular situation, I just think the person was trying to do the community a solid by just being like, this is a broken location. That's my position on it. What do you think, Lisa?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that. I can't see a problem with it personally. If the proxy's not there, it's not there. It doesn't matter who else solves it. They're not going to find it, are they? So by alerting the rest of the hunters to the fact it's not there, I see that as a positive personally. I mean, you obviously have to look at their motives for doing that. And in this case, I think the motive, you know, their heart was in the right place when they made that post. But I also don't think that other hunters should then shoot them down in flames for doing it. If they want to post an alert people to the fact that the proxy's gone missing, so be it. Not spoiling a hunt, because to all intents and purposes, whether it's one proxy or 30 proxies that you're looking for, if the proxy isn't there, but someone's found the end location, the hunt's over and done with anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And I agree with you both there as well. I think personally, if you are part of a treasure hunt, I don't think you, and Nick, you brought up, if you've already have multiple of said treasure hunt prizes, it's not your place to say something to somebody else about, you know, you're doing something wrong for the hunt. You know, you've already got yourself, you know, one third of the prizes. You know, if there's somebody that's doing something wrong with the hunt, it's you spending all your time finding it and not giving it to anybody else. This person was trying to help, you know, help out by just letting people know not to go there. Because I know in this particular hunt that they were pretty few and far between. So it wasn't like they were all in like one park and, you know, it was an easy run to get to the prize. They were, you know, pretty far around in whether you needed to search. But this does actually go into your next topic that you had mentioned to me before, Nick. And this is similar to what we were just saying just then. This one's claiming multiple. What are your thoughts on claiming multiple prizes if there are multiple prizes available? Claiming multiple prizes on the same hunt. So say a treasure hunt comes out. It has 15, or as you made a mention of it, it has 30 locations that there is a proxy. You go to said location, you solved it, you go to said location, you get said prize when you get to the location. What are your thoughts on people going for those multiple, as many as they can on the same hunt? Do you think, just what's your opinion on it? Obviously, there's not going to be a right or wrong here, because we have no say over this, but what's your thoughts on this?
It's easy for me. My first experience with it, was when I was in a multiple prize hunt. I was with you. I think it was back at that, again, that was that Red Herrings hunt. And again, you know, we had the Vermont one that we won. And I specifically, this is my elephant memory, for the time being, right? I specifically remember having this conversation with you, Rob. I was like, hey man, I'm like, we run this Vermont one. Do we, you know, we've never been in this position before where it's like, do we go for more? And like my internal gut was already saying like, no, other people bought this hunt. It's not that big of a deal. Let other people get in there and get that experience. Cause I felt great. You know what I mean? I felt great. We won one. Cool. We got the one we wanted. Awesome. You know? Yep. And I thought that was the right thing to do. And then that was, you know, but come to find out, by the time that ended, that wasn't what really happened. We noticed other teams that just keep winning, you know, going for multiple prizes on the same hunt. Here's what I got to say. And again, I look at it from I mentioned this before. I look at it, what's best for the hobby, what's best for the author, and what brings more people into the hobby that are new. And I feel that if you're going into a hunt and you start, you know, you start claiming multiple prizes on a stage. You're a great hunter, you know what I mean? And you've been doing this a while, but it's never enough for you. You got to claim more prizes for the hunt. I just don't think it looks good for the author. Outside looking in, I don't really think it helps their brand that much. Because if new people are looking in, they're like, well, so-and-so's keep winning the same author, and I don't, what's the point of me even doing this, you know, if the same people are winning it all the time? So I could see that being an issue. I think leaving, if you go in to a hunt that's got multiple prizes, this is what I would do. I go in, if I win one, I stop. Okay, it gives the rest of the people that are in there a chance to win. Ultimately, that's going to make more people happy. The author is going to be having a larger fan base, and it's also going to help them with sales in the future. You know, I think just what happens is you know, it's an addictive hobby. People get that rush. If you've won a few, you know, that rush gets less and less. We're human beings, right? Anything that's kind of like that, that forbidden fruit for us that gives us that rush, you have that multiple times, the rush becomes less and less, right? I kind of equate it to like, let's think of it like this. You ever read those articles that you read an article about a guy that goes into an all-you-eat, you know, he goes into one of those all-you-can-eat buffets, right? And then you read about the manager having to come out to him after like the 11th trip to the buffet, and you're like, hey, man, other people need to eat too. That's kind of like the feeling I get with this. It's like, hey, other people need to eat too. You've had enough. Get out of my restaurant. So I kind of look at it like that. I think if it's that kind of situation and you're going into it and you feel the need, like you need more, it's just, you know, display some moderation. It was funny. I was watching a movie with my kid the other day, and it literally just hit me like a ton of bricks. We were watching that movie Finding Nemo, right? And we got to that scene where Nemo falls on the dock, and he just gets surrounded by like all these seagulls. Right? And what do the seagulls all start saying? They're all like, mine, 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 mine. And it's just like this frenzy of just greed going on right there. So I don't know. I look at it from that perspective. It's like, get in there, you get your win, you get out. More win, it helps the author. The author maybe might, at the end of the hunt, they'll actually be in the black rather than be in the red. And more people get that experience. I mean, I don't see why that wouldn't be a good way to look at it, but some people just, it's never enough. So I don't know. What do you think, Lisa?
Well, actually, Lisa, real quick, before you get in, Nick, just on that red herrings one, you made a great point. We won that one in Vermont. But one thing I remember the most about that is that what we then did was we reached out and we helped other people. We didn't try and solve it ourselves anymore. We reached out to other hunters and said, hey, you know, who's working on what, you know, could we help you out? And I know we helped out with some other people and some other ones, the West Virginia one, you know, and we both found stuff and said, hey, we think it might be here. We reached out to that person that asked for help. We gave them that information, and she ended up winning that one, you know, because it wasn't that she had her own as well. It wasn't just because me and you were there. We worked as a team to get it all together, but we didn't go for it ourselves at that point, even though we could have. And again, I'm not tooting my own horn here because that's not what this is about, but it was about more spreading it out. That person then helped us out on another hunt later on. So it was something that we made a good contact in the community that helped us out later on and is still a good friend today. So, I mean, Lisa, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I know it's difficult. Some people are really super competitive, and that's why they do this as their hobby. And they, you know, they just want to win everything. And if you've got a team of four people and you're taking part in a treasure hunt and there are 30 prizes, I could get it. I could see why you might want to try and win maybe four of them so that each of you could have one of the prizes, a memento of winning that competition. But that would be like my limit. I think it's also worth saying that when I go on the forums and the groups and I'm looking at, you know, a solution to an armchair treasure hunt or a boots on the ground hunt, and then I'm reading who's won, and it's the same people winning the same. It's just like, oh gosh, really? Those people again? I really wish someone else could have a go and win. And they do have a go, but they don't win. And I think I find that a bit frustrating. I mean, kudos to the teams that do win all the time. They've obviously got a really good formula. They've got people on their team who have a different set of skills that, and they complement each other. But it just gets a little bit boring. That's the only way I can explain it. It's like when you're at the Olympics and it's 1984 or whatever, and East Germany are winning all the gold medals in the swimming and they win every single one. You know, it just gets boring after a while. And then people start to switch off, and that's not good. It's not good for the hobby as a whole. That's what I think about it. I mean, me personally, with my hunts, I've made sure that didn't happen, because there was one location, one prize, done and dusted. No arguing about it. No people clamoring to win lots of them. There was only one to win. And that, for me, is the type of hunt that I also want to participate in.
Excellent. Now, Lisa, this one is going to be towards you more as a creator then. What about, so still on that same theme of winning multiple hunts, what are your thoughts on repeat wins by a team, or even an individual if we're going to put it that way as well, but repeat wins by the same person but for the same author? So, for instance, you as a creator, you have created lots of different hunts. I know that, again, our experience when me and Nick were part of a team and we solved your Letters of Saint Germain, as soon as we solved that, we were done solving your puzzles. We were more than leaning towards working with you to, you know, go, you know, help you out on the next ones. And I did with the podcast, helping you out with the lower 48 and a whole bunch of other stuff. And I know Nick did as well. He did the voiceover and stuff like that for the trailhead. So what are your thoughts on repeat wins on different hunts this time? Not even in the same hunt, but different hunts from the same author. I mean, obviously, if you haven't won, you want to keep going until you do win. But what's your thoughts on that?
I would want to know why the people kept on winning for the same author, because it would almost seem as if perhaps they had some connection to the author, or they were emailing them, or perhaps were a friend of them, or had once been part of a team with them. It's difficult, because you can't stop people from winning. If they take part in your hunt and they win, even if they won the last one, as long as they've done it fairly and it's all been above board and there's not been any sort of like hints or clues or, you know, things that other people haven't had access to, then it may not be an ideal situation, but I don't really think there's much you can do to stop it, as long as it's all been done fairly and in the correct way.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you on that. I don't. I just think that, and Nick's talked about this when we did Red Herring and stuff like that. It's my and his opinion is, you know, when you've solved one of this author, we try to then work with the author. With Lost Skull, he hasn't done another one, but with Lost Skull, we basically said to Robert Brewer when we solved it, we're like, if you do another one, we're not going to do it, but we'll help you. You know, we'll beta test it. We'll, you know, do something like that, but we won't compete, because for me, I've done it. I've won. You know, if I try to go in again, I'm going to know, you know, maybe some the way his mind sort of works with the last hunt. Now that does obviously occur for anybody that did participate in the hunt, but I just feel for myself personally, I'm like, well, if we've solved it, I'm not going to, there's no crown for me to wear for winning multiple of these hunts. So I don't need to go into the next one.
But as Nick mentioned earlier, for a lot of people, this hobby is really addictive, and it's your prerogative to be able to say, no, we're going to be honorable about this. We're going to do this, and we've won one. We're going to let other people have a chance or a go, and it's good for the hobby and everything. But not everybody thinks like that. Some people, for them, it is just win, 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 and that's all they want to do. And they don't really care about how it impacts on other people or the hobby in general. And that's a battle that has to be fought, I'm afraid. And there is, as far as I can see, there is no right or wrong way to tackle that. And it's really up to the individual. But I agree with you that if you win one major hunt by an author, do you really want to do it again? What are you hoping to prove apart from the win, win, win? And as Nick mentioned earlier, mine, mine, mine.
This is something that I'll chime in here, because this one's kind of, I've had this conversation with a lot of authors. I've had this conversation with Lost Skull. He understood it. Me and Robert have sat in on Zooms with him, not for treasure hunts, but for other things that he wrote that include puzzles, but we got to be his guinea pigs. And you want to know what? I would not trade that in for being able to participate in another hunt. Like, I get
absolutely. I 100% agree with you.
And that's the thing. Like, Rob, you did your hunt that we're on the same team. You know, you're an author. I know you, and you've done your hunt where it was like for the podcast with the tombstones and stuff like that. You ran it by me. I thought it worked. I never participated in that. Lisa, we won your hunt. We got to develop a relationship with you, which I wouldn't trade in for the world either. But at that point, you know, I said, Lisa, it doesn't do it for me to sit there and just be like, oh no, I gotta, you know, I think people get inside their own heads with this. It's addictive, but at the same time, there's ego involved. You know, you start getting teams and it's just like, no, you got to defend the title. What title? What are you talking about? You know, it's like you win one, you talk to the author, like, look, I want your brand to be good. I want your brand to do good. Okay. Let me help you write the other one. I'm trustworthy. I'm always going to keep my mouth shut. And that's exactly how it panned out. Like, Lisa, after Saint Germain, we helped her write the 48. Lisa ran by her Rhapsody in Grace solution to me. I said, yes, it works. Never said a word to anybody. And that's awesome. You know, I just don't see, again, and I'm, again, I sound like a broken record, but what's best for bringing in new people? What's best for helping the author expand their brand? What's best for helping the author make more money and not, you know, every author's complaining like, I don't ever make any money off these. Well, look at your formula, you know? So look at your formula, look at the way you market your hunts, and you have nobody to blame but yourself. Okay. If you're not making money, change your formula. With repeating wins under the same authors, I'm just like, think of it like this. Okay. If you had two boxers, right, and two boxers are trying to attract a title fight to the champion, and you have two boxers, right? One boxer has 15 wins and no losses. The other boxer also has 15 wins and no losses. Okay. But the first boxer has fought the same guy 15 times in a row and beat him. Okay. The other one has fought 15 different guys and beat him. Which of those two guys do you think is more prepared to fight the champion? Think about that. I think the answer is pretty obvious. It's the guy that has fought more people, has exposed himself to more styles. He is more prepared for the unpredictable. And I think in the end of the day, when you win a hunt, you move on to another hunt, you move on to another author, you get your ass kicked, you know, and you become a better hunter. Sitting around on the same author, understanding their style, and yeah, they could change things up a bit, but once you got a beat on them, you're pretty good at their general theme compared to somebody that's new that's coming in. But I just, it doesn't do it for me to try and beat somebody new on an author that I've already solved their hunt. It just doesn't do it for me. So the whole boxing thing, I kind of thought about that on the way home. It's just like, it's crystal clear to me. It's just like, I'm in jiu-jitsu, you know what I mean? And I go into jiu-jitsu, and there's guys that I spar with all the time. I spar with them every week. I know their game. They know my game. It's hard for us to grow and evolve in the martial art if we continue to just spar each other. You want to know where we really get good? When you got a new guy that comes in that's stronger than you, younger than you, faster than you, and he's completely unpredictable. That's when you really get put to the test, and that's when you get better. So I kind of equate this to, you know, the same way when I look at just sticking around with the same author. You're not helping them, you're not helping yourself, and you're not even giving that author a chance to kind of breathe and bring new people into their brand, you know. So this is crystal clear for me. You win it, you move on, and that's that.
Yeah, and 100%. And that, again, with all the notes that you've given me, that does lead into to our last topic. And we might as well go with this one today and finish this off for us today, because this has been a really great conversation. The last question, or the last topic I did want to bring up, not so much a question, is we've talked about this before. Lisa, we participated in your hunt. We won it and we didn't do another one. But then we formed a team with you. You joined us on other treasure hunts. Just because we all work so well. But I want to get both of your opinions, both hunter, creator, everything like that. This has been a pretty on a hunt recently. Again, we're not mentioning anybody. We're not trying to bring anybody down. But what are your opinions on working on a particular treasure hunt of an author, when that author has been known to be part of your team on other hunts? So you've worked with them on other hunts. Now you've created your own hunt, but your team is competing in your hunt. What are your thoughts on this? Nick, what's up with you?
It's pretty much the same as, you know, same answer as the other one. Here's what's going to happen. When Rob, me and you have been working for years now. Okay. When we work on hunts together, I send you stuff. You send me stuff. You have to deal with my crazy rabbit holes and pictures and stuff like that. You send me crazy grids that give me, okay, all the time. We know how each other thinks. We just know, because we've known each other for so many years. With that being said, what good does it do me to sit there and participate in your hunt? I know how you think. It's just, and this is what's going to be the, I already know the rebuttal to what I'm saying here. It's just like, well, they could change up their game every now and then. I'm like, yeah, dude, but compare yourself to somebody that doesn't know the author and is not on their team, that doesn't know how they work, that doesn't have conversations with them every day, that doesn't see them sending you stuff on different hunts and how they think. It is not the same. There is a crystal clear advantage when you're working with somebody on your own team and then you do their hunt. You just know how they think, more or less. I'm not saying exactly how they think, but it's definitely going to be more an advantage of somebody that doesn't know them from a hole in the wall. So that's my opinion on it. Like, if you guys are on my team, I'm just not doing your hunt. You know, it's just the way it is. It doesn't do it for me. There are so many of these things. Like, all these other topics that we talked about, I think that kind of envelopes them all. There's like 50 to 100 other of these things. You have to do this one, you know? So I try to look at it again. You're on my team. You're doing a hunt. I'd rather help you promote it. I'd rather be a guinea pig and help you work out your kinks so it doesn't, you know, so there's no typos, there's no errors in the puzzle and stuff like that. But I'm not going to sit there and I couldn't imagine. I'd be kind of like embarrassed. Like, I'm like holding up a trophy of somebody on my team's hunt. And I just, dude, I wouldn't even want to be in that picture. That's just my personal opinion of the matter. I just don't think it'll help their brand. I don't think it'll attract new people into that person's brand of hunts. So, I know it's a lot of what I said before, but it's not something I really have to waver on in thought. It's pretty crystal clear to me.
And Lisa, what do you think there?
Yeah. Oh, I totally agree 100%. I mean, for me, it's an unwritten rule. If I'm working with people on a team, you know, and they create a treasure hunt, I'm not doing that hunt. I know too much about them. I know the way they look at treasure hunts and clues. And I would feel as if I personally were at an advantage if I were participating in their hunt. But likewise, as someone who creates them, I don't want one of my team members, even if they're not a current team member and it's someone that I worked with, you know, 6 months ago on a different treasure hunt, whatever, I don't really want them participating in my hunt, because I don't want anyone to turn around and point the finger at me and saying, you know, this has been an unfair experience because such a body worked with you on this team and they know you really well and they know how you look at clues and how you do your research and how you write verses. I don't want to put myself in that position, because I want everything to be completely and utterly 100% above board and transparent. I don't want any room for any comments like that or any doubts to happen I don't want anyone to think anything negatively. So for me, it's a really big no-no. And I mean, it means that I can't have some great people doing my hunts. I can't have you and Nick or Adrian doing my hunts again. But that is a price I'm willing to pay. It's just a big no-no as far as I'm concerned. So I agree with you totally, Nick.
But you also gain, you know, I mean, in that loss of people working on your hunts, you also gain people that you trust that you can kind of shoot things off of and, make sure it works. And I think that's a good trade-off, because there are authors out there that don't test their stuff out on anybody and ends up going unsolved because they never tested it on anybody. It makes sense to them, but, because they don't have people, you know, they never got tweaked, so to speak. So there is an
you always this. Have to have someone who can go through your solve, rip it apart, tear it to shreds, look at every possible outcome and just check that it works okay and that there's no gray areas. I suppose in that sense it is a valuable experience because you are gaining people who can help you out with your own hunt. But it's a big no-no.
I mean, and then to me as well, you're gaining that, you're losing a couple of people participating in your hunt, but you're gaining the friendship of those people in the team and the future hunts that you're going to do with them in the future. Again, me and Nick aren't going to do any of your hunts, but when you joined our team, we worked together on Bosal, which we solved, a Vault of Riches, which you and Nick were superstars on, and like, I remember that night that was solved, you guys were all on Messenger talking. I went out to dinner. All of a sudden, I'm getting a message from Nick saying, call me. We have this answered, you know, and called him. And between the chat and the message and between you and him and everybody else, and we solved it in the matter of a couple of hours because we'd all worked together. I wouldn't give that up for being able to participate in your hunts either, though. That's the difference. Like, I would rather have you on my team and continue to do future hunts with, you know, with which whatever comes out, I know we just jump on Messenger and we'll start talking about it. You know, oh, well, what do you want to work on today? Let's work on Hair of the Moon. Let's work on this. And maybe we haven't worked on it for a while. Maybe we worked on it last week. But, you know, I'd rather do that than be able to say, okay, Lisa, well, when your next hunt comes out, I'm going to be going for it. You know, it just doesn't make it worthwhile for me. This hobby for me is about the fun of working, of having people that I'm working with, because a lot of time I'm doing it in some spare time that I have. It's not my main thing. Obviously, I work, I have a family, I have kids, you know, and almost everybody else does. So I just do it in my spare time. You know, I'll do it while I'm on a break from work. I'll do it in the evening while sometimes, because of the time difference between you and the UK and me and Nick, I'll just do it in my spare time. Me and Nick, we'll text each other, you know, not just about treasure hunts, but we'll sometimes text about other things, geocaches. We've talked about puzzle boxes before. You know, it's just, I would rather have that experience than be able to participate in a Nick built hunt. I just think that's, and I would feel wrong in having worked with Nick for so long, then throwing my hat in that ring saying, oh, Nick's coming out with a puzzle next week. Oh, by the way, I'm going to be participating. Who wants to work with me? You know, because it's just, to me, the optics of it just look wrong. You just look like somebody that you know what's going to happen on this hunt. Even if that the treasure hunt creator is going to say, well, it's completely different to anything I've ever created before. It's still your hunt. You know, they're still going to have, from the experience of working with you, the tidbits of knowing what you're good at. You know, so if your hunt comes out, and you were saying this before, Nick, If I create a hunt, you know it's probably going to be cipher heavy, because that's the way I work. I work with codes, I work with ciphers, the podcast and everything like that. I'm good at those things, you know. So if you come to do my hunt, Nick, you know it's probably going to, and you know also from our conversations what kinds of codes I'm good at, you know, from our talks and from our previous hunts that we've worked together.
I know how you like to present them. That's the big
exactly thing. Exactly. And I know for the same for you, like an image and a verse, I know how your brain works with those sorts of things, that I know that if that's there, I can see things in there from the way that we've had conversations as well. It just, for me, it doesn't work that way. I mean, there's you've said it yourself. There's If not now, there's still going to be plenty of treasure hunts coming out. And even if the creator has put a lot of time, a lot of effort, and let's just say it out there, a lot of their own money into creating this thing, that should be even more that they should be saying to the people that they've worked with, hey, you know, either slow down or at the very least buy the book or buy the puzzle or, you know, support me. You're on my team. You know, if you created one, and this is what we've done with Robert Brewer, anytime he comes with a Kickstarter, I'm doing it. No matter if it's like a module for a role playing game I've never played before, I'm buying the module because, you know, I love his artwork and the way his brain works. So if you created a treasure hunt tomorrow that was a book and it was a $50 book and I had to buy the book for the puzzle, I'm buying the book, but I'm not doing the puzzle. There's ways you can support the author without having to then support the author and then win the prize. I think that's almost double dealing.
I did the same thing too. It's just like, I think it was about like a year ago too. And it's along the same line. And, it's, you know, same thing, Robert Brewer, and even like, Art of Hidden Messages, like a year ago, when you put on free hunts, it's just, you feel bad when people put on free hunts and stuff just because, you know, they're putting their own money. I just threw them like $100. Like, here's $100. I have it. I don't care. Go buy some art supplies, make killer art, because I love hunts with art. And if I support it, you know, you're going to get a good product. You know what I mean? And I think that's pretty much what it is. I'd rather do that than sit there and, you know, oh, I got to participate in a hunt again. You know, it's just, I just rather their brand grow and flourish with newer people, a bigger community, more people working together, less people caring. You know what I mean? I mean, caring is just like being so, you know, that's just the way I see it. Having Lisa on our team now and, you know, even not working on her hunts. Yeah. I mean, she writes awesome hunts. She writes the hunts that I love to do. You know, it's just, I learned so much from her hunts and I learned from that style of hunts. But here's what I gain. I gain somebody that is killer about history in the UK. And how did that benefit us? We had that Hidden Treasures hunt that came out and that was strictly UK and she ripped it to pieces because she just knows the UK. We have the Oracle, which has been unsolved. She loves it. I love it. She knows the UK better than any of us will on our team. So that is a huge asset to have when you have more of a global mindset and you want to look into more hunts that are outside America. You have that ally now. And all you had to do to trade that in is just to, you know, not do her hunts anymore. I'll take it any day of the week. So that's my 2 cents on the matter.
Excellent. Well, guys, we've come to the end here. Of course, there's always going to be a lot more that we can talk about. And we might revisit this another day with some more people on and talk about it more. And what I am going to encourage is if anybody is, obviously I'm hoping people are listening, but for all the people that are listening, that if you do have even a comment about something that we've all said today, I'd love you to send it to me. I want to know what everybody's thoughts on this is. We are, as we keep saying, a community, and I'm hoping to, I'm not saying that I am, but I'm hoping to be at least a part of a voice of this community with this podcast, that if you do have thoughts on anything that we've talked about today, differences in ideas than what we've talked about today, let me know. Either, you know, shoot me an email at cobarlive@gmail, go to our Facebook group, Facebook page, DM me personally, you know, whatever you want to do, contact me and let us know. I'm up for all sides of this. I want to know what everybody's opinion of. We've had Nick, we've had Lisa, and you've had me. We've given you what we've thought on this, these topics, but I really would love to hear what everybody else has to say. And especially when this launches, really going forward with a good, strong conversation on this. So I do want to thank you both, Lisa and Nick, for coming on today. Lisa, obviously, do you have anything coming up that you would like to talk about? Any new puzzles or hunts coming up, or are you just happy to be a treasure hunter for a little while? What's going on there?
I do have something, but I can't talk about it at the moment. It's top secret.
Excellent. Well, I know you're going to come to me to help you at least launch it when it's ready. So I'll deal with having that extra benefit there. Nick, I know we're going to continue to work in together on a couple of other new hunts and stuff like that as soon as they are released, and maybe even go back over some of the ones that are out there, like Hair of the Moon, and I think I might even pick up Oracle again and take a new look with some fresh eyes again. So again, thank you both for being on the show today, and I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Robert. It's always a pleasure to come on your show and, you know, give thoughts on this this hobby that, you know, that we love. And, you know, being on here with both of you, I mean, you know, we're like family at this point. It's just we can talk about anything. And I never once felt like I couldn't talk about anything here. So it's very refreshing to come on here and discuss topics that hopefully will, you know, strengthen the hobby as a whole. And you know, onward and forward into the future with it. So again, thank you.
Okay. So yeah, thank you very much for inviting me to speak on this. It is a tremendous pleasure to be part of the treasure hunting community, whether it's in the US or globally. I used to do treasure hunting on my own, and it was a bit of a solitary hobby. And then I discovered that it was so much more than that, that you can have a really unique relationship with other people who also love this hobby too, and who are passionate about it. And that's what I found with you guys. And I think that's what a lot of other hunters find as well. As well as the need to find something and solve those clues, it's about who you're doing it with. As much as the solve itself, it's about those relationships, and they'll go far beyond the treasure hunting. And that to me is priceless.
Excellent. And that's a good part to, good place to stop. So, just real quickly, please do follow us on Apple Podcasts, where you can download us on pretty much anything other than Apple Podcasts. You can download us anywhere. But we do, if you have a chance, do go on and give us a rating and review. It does really help us. Follow us on all the social medias, everything from Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Pretty much everything is at CodeBar Live. And I do want to, again, thank you guys for coming on. And until next time, everybody, keep digging.